Blog Talk Radio.
Glowing in a bed of coals, the poet is born. Our story is riddled with challenges and changes, like blows from a blacksmith's hammer, bent and chiseled into shape. If only forging a poet were that easy. Emotional development, relationships, experiences, environment, and genetics all take a hand in molding the poet we are today. So welcome to the show where we examine the X and Y's, celebrating the human experience, where your true colors are what ties the room together. Get comfortable. We're about to hear the poetry that we are made of. This is Double Helix on Late Night Poets, and we are a group on allpoetry.com. You don't have to be in the group to participate. It's more fun if you are. And we are here tonight to celebrate some poems by many members of allpoetry.com that are in the contest by Dan Delcina. I believe Dan is with me. Hello, Dan.
Your beliefs are correct. Keep believing. I am here, absolutely.
Awesome.
How are you?
I thought that was you.
Yes, that is me.
Exhausted, but like, I don't know, it's the right before summer reading club rush at the library. It's like going to all the schools and having them come to me and like try to convince kids to read over the summer and come to my programs. But it's like every single day is back-to-back presentations, and I'm kind of an introvert, so having to speak in front of large crowds continuously every day. I'm tired. I didn't get a lunch break today, so I was just like, it's all right.
I have to get a lunch
right
break
before the show. I know. I overschedule myself.
How are you? The same way. I'm all right. I'm the same way. I was I'm overdoing myself too. I have work is just killing me. My boss, I love my boss to pieces, but she's give project after project after project, and I literally was taking a break today, to climb a ladder on my barn and fix the roof. That was my breaks from work today. So it's just like work, and then, you know, staying up late. So it's just, you know, burning the candles at both ends, but creates more light when you do that, right? So, you know, busy's good. It means you're still alive. But, yeah, no, everything's good. And I heard that you were queen for a day this last past weekend or something like that, right? Did you get anointed as queen?
Not quite queen. I am duchess. So there's a princess and a queen above me.
Okay.
what Dan is referring to is I am now the leader of the local medieval reenactment group. So, you know, I got spoiled for a day. We had this fancy court, and I have a crown and a throne. I got all dressed up and had lots of fun. But really it means I'm in charge of a nonprofit educational organization. So it's actually more work. But, you know, I'm a workaholic. So it's fun. You know, I get to organize camping trips and demos and things of people living history and learning about the past in fun ways. And I've been participating in it for like 10 years, but now I'm in charge.
That's
for
cool.
better or worse.
Hey, you know, heavy lies the crown, right? So
yeah,
you're, you know. So I actually have a couple of announcements real quick, if I can. Oh, I'm sorry. Were you going to say something, Faisina?
No, go ahead.
Yeah, so for those of you who listen to a lot of the shows, there's a couple of quick changes. So we're at Gray and Bobby, Captain B2, and I are actually kind of switching things around a little bit. So the Saturday shows, this coming Saturday, Bad Company, is now going to be Gray. Gray Eyes and myself are going to be the hosts. And Gray is now going to do exploring Ekphrasis with Bobby. So we're switching. And I want to thank both of them for appeasing me. It's all my fault that this is happening. I'm very busy this summer with a lot of different things, and the Ekphrasis shows weren't working out time-wise for me. So also thank you to Phil, who helped kind of organize all that. So we kind of I talked to Bobby yesterday. We all kind of figured it out, and that's the way the shows are going to go. And I can thankfully also keep this show here. So, yeah, for anybody listening to the shows will be changing a little bit as far as hosts are concerned. But thank the maker I'm still here in this show because I love Aphasia and the Pieces. Oh, and, by the way, Ben Hart said, give my love to your co-hosts. So he sends his love to you for tonight, and he's excited to hear his poems being read.
Thanks, Ben.
Yes, all the
I always enjoy Ben's poems. They're incredible. So I'm excited to have
absolutely. So yeah, I have a couple of contests up, and if we need more poems, I don't think you posted everyone from the contest. So I did get permission for a lot of other people, so we can make sure we get them all in if we can.
Great! Yes, please add them. I only put the ones on the board where I knew that I for sure had permission.
Okay. Yeah, we'll go through those and then we can come back. I'm pulling those ones up right now. And we can make sure we do all of the ones that otherwise. So, yeah, let's go ahead. I think we can probably get started, right?
Okay. So the prompt is an image of a sunset in a city. And that was for the contest, The Sun Always Sets No Matter What the Day Brings. And the prompt within the prompt, it said, what goes through your mind at the end of the day? How does the coming lack of light affect you? So we're asking them to think emotionally about these sunsets. And here is
absolutely.
Our first entry. It's called
all
The
these
Setting.
Pictures, by the way, were taken in Malden, Massachusetts, for anybody who cares about geography. Just literally me walking around the neighborhood taking pictures. So I'm always fascinated by sunsets and how the light kind of shines different places. So I really appreciate everybody doing the contest. But sorry, Faisiana, let's continue here.
You got to come here and see it on the mountains. Okay, so this is All Red Jay, From Morning to the setting sun. Sun peaks above the distant east. Life hatches with the break of day, as fragile rays of toddler dawn crawl up the misty slopes to play. Above her wispy, cloudy locks, hope and newness hover lightly. In the early, warming infant skies, the sun holds hands with clouds politely. The bright, new, toasty daylight finds sweet adolescent sunlit hours, but midday brings some stormy weather, the billowing fury of tempest showers. We toil beneath the pitchy squall. The sun is there, but only hiding, with straining sinews and panting breaths, press on for daylight's reuniting. The rings, the evening twilight bells, as sun with cirrus fingerprints spreads apricot blotches on the sky, the world's aflame with crimson tints. These 24 warm, crowded hours by forceful time are snatched away, with winter head but spring at heart, not sure if we wish to go or stay. As sun steams down in the distant bay, though life is fading, it isn't rushed, and right now tears the stars in two, sprinkling down its sleepy glitter dust. Some say the sun is gone and dead, flat earth ideas of the soul, but it only dawns on another shore. Though body is dust, the spirit's whole. End poem.
Excellent read. And this is a lot of fun. I really like the rhyming. It was very, very interesting. And the combination, I think, of the personification, but also description instead. So it was really good. I think you and I are going to agree on this. I don't know why, but I really love toasty daylight finds. The sun, there's so much different temperature that you can feel from the sun. Today it was really hot around here. Not only, like I said, was I out up on my roof on a ladder, it was like 90-something degrees and really humid. So that on those days you feel the sun, but those days when it like it's a little bit cool, but the sun comes out and it's kind of toasty, like it makes you feel good. I really like that toasty daylight finds, you know, maybe cold in the night and then the toasty sun kind of comes up to warm you. But really taking us through all the different things that could happen in the atmosphere, right? We toil beneath the pitchy squall. These 24 warm, crowded hours by forceful time are snatched away, with winter head but spring at heart, not sure if we wish to go or stay. It is really interesting just how the sun controls, you know, everything. It's the all weather is literally is hot and cold air colliding. That's literally every single bit of weather, and it's all controlled by the sun, which is very, very interesting. I think my favorite thing was really the end. Some say the sun is gone and dead, but flat earth ideas of the soul, but it's only dawns on another shore through body is dust and the spirit's whole. It is true. You know, we look at the sunsets and that's somebody else's sunrise that we're seeing. So we're giving up the sunlight so somebody else can have a day to do what they're going to do. And then they do the same thing. They go to sleep and give up the sun and we get it the next day. So we think it's kind of gone and left us, but it's, you know, right now it's dark where I am. And, somebody over in Hawaii is ending their work day. So, you know, it's everybody gets to play with the sun different times. But I like all Red Jay, does a lot of my contests, and I thought this was really beautiful towards the prompt. You got to read it, Aphasiana. I know your mind was all over the place thinking when you were reading this.
I really enjoyed it. I did like the line, the bright new toasty daylight finds. Toasty is great there. I like that it also used the adolescent sunlit hours. I've never heard that before. You know, I've heard it as like being born in the morning and being like elderly at night, but I never really think about the in between. The it's not like the wee hours of the morning. The adolescent sunlit hours. I've never really thought about that time of day. So I like that it gradually works its way through the time. And then the pitchy squall that it's talking about, that kind of fits with the whole adolescent sunlit, because, you know, when, like, when boys have their voice changing, it's kind of pitchy there sometimes, a little squeaky there in the pre-adolescence. And there's sometimes a stormy kind of mood. So to have that, like, halfway through the day, I thought that was an interesting choice. And the color choices, apricot. But I love apricot used as a color because they are a very distinct kind of color. So I thought there was excellent choices within this. A well-deserved silver.
Yeah, I agree. It was very inventive with the word choices. So cool. Thank you, All Red J. Let's crank along here.
All right. So now you have one by... I'm going to say the name wrong, so you know what? I'm just going to get you to read it, Dan.
Okay, thanks. All right, I'm going to say it wrong, but I'm going to say it anyway, too. Marhart Halani. Marhart Halani, 1848, I think is the name. And this is called Boxes. Square windows top to light the kitchen sink in our house growing up. Across the way, another window and a sink to link. Excuse me. The passage of a single photon ray from home to home between the walls of stone. Below, a length of concrete ribbon lay. For parking cars and making home from home, when washing dishes at the end of day, I saw my neighbor washing hers alone. Her dark head bent above the faucet spray, the busy hands, the flash of kitchen chrome, her eyes averted, striving to allay the thoughts of being watched, hers and my own. She lived in her box while I lived in mine, our cubes and boxes gathered in our town. Defined within an angle or a line, our world and wild sunk beneath the weight of paving, sleeping, angry, and divine. Lived nature, all the roads through life were straight, occasionally raging, beauty grown, through cracks exploding gravel to create a path for blossoms, where the rays had shone, a route to lead creation to the sun, destroyed the lines that hid unknown from known. I wish that I had fought the lines and won, looked Mrs. Shanice in the eye and run, not to be dreaming of things undone. My neighbor's boxes, she lies straight in one, in box, in vault, in plot, her essence still, in boundary by dashes on a bun of granite that compresses yonder hill. And I am here, I watch the sun decline, impress his fingers on my eyes, and still a warmth that lingers, and a sense that I'm not irredeemable. I can still curve. There's still time, says sun. There's still time. End poem.
Excellent read, and really thought-provoking, right? I like that recognition at the end, not irredeemable, I can still curb. Even if you're near the end of things, it seems there's still more light to make those changes. I really like that. The part where they're looking at each other doing the dishes and just recognizing that there's kind of a parallel between the houses, they're in their own separate little boxes. They may not interact fully, but there's other people sharing their experience. They aren't the only one with those routines. So there's kind of a distant camaraderie there as things go on. And I like the way that it's described with the single photon ray from home between the walls of stone. There's a nice rhythm to that, the between the walls of stone. Something about the way that I don't know if it's not quite iambic pentameter, but there's a certain beat to it that I enjoy. Where is it now? My neighbor's boxes, she lies straight in one, in box, in vault, in plot. Her essence still is boundaried by dashes on a bun. It's very visual for me. I can picture it being formed, like almost in slow motion, like it's being drawn, the walls as they're described, and where the people are stuck within their boxes, and then the light that comes through. It's a lifelike kind of poem where you can't help but imagine it and then think about what it's representing. Really cool.
Absolutely. And it's always too late to go back, but I will say that I certainly liked this when I read it, but after reading it this time, I was like, man, I should have given this higher on my award. So Mahartholani, if you're listening, I really like your poem even better this time reading it. I always like when people focus on different things. If we get to my second contest today, people had so many different ideas from it. It was very interesting. I awarded things today, and I just love, for if anybody who's not looking at it visually, it's the sun really coming out and kind of blurring everything else, but it's down a street and you see these kind of two houses there. So I love the idea of how the sunlight is really almost separating everybody in here. And he's saying, you know, kind of like, I wish I didn't just leave her in her box and me in mine. Why didn't I go over and visit? Why did I let the sun kind of separate us and we just kind of stayed in our little boxes all the time? You know, she lived in her box while I lived in mine, our cubes and boxes gathered in our town, defined an angle or a line, our world, and wild sunk beneath the weight of paving, sleeping, angry, and divine lived nature. Yeah, you know, it is so interesting of these little boxes that we kind of live in, and I don't know if anybody else feels this way, but I almost feel like the world, you know, if you're lying in bed or I'm sitting here, you almost feel like the world is, you know, you're safe, right? You're safe in this thing, and then the world is somewhere else, and you're just in a little box that's, you know, the outside is all still there. And that passage of the single photon ray from home to home between, you know, between the walls of stone is really interesting because the sun kind of comes through us no matter what. I don't know if people know this, but photons from the sun literally go through the earth. They're going through your body right now. You're not seeing them, but the photons just kind of keep going, which is really, really interesting. So I like the little bits of science in there too. But the rhyming was just fantastic. What got me the second time was just the composition of this piece, that it didn't hit me as much till I was actually reading it out loud. And I just love the way he or she put these, kind of put the rhyming and just intertwined the sentences together. So they weren't kind of necessarily separated. They were just kind of intertwined, which is really interesting because if you do look at the picture and the idea is that everybody is kind of intertwined, but not necessarily, you know, melding together, which is almost like the composition too. So I thought that was brilliant. But excellent, excellent poem. Thank you so much for entering there. And what else do we have?
Well, surprisingly, no one wrote to prompt 2 or prompt 3, but prompt 4 has quite a few. And it happens that the first one we have an audio for.
Cool.
So it's by Weaver Dreams. And here we go.
I wait as the golden day-glow orb sinks slowly from my sight, taking with it my need to hide the bone-deep fear I fight. While others may mourn this, the dying of the light, 'tis my release from hiding, gives unto me the night. I have alabaster dead cold skin, eyes deep dark pools of death, enclosed in a shell of beauty, with no beating heart or breath. What my plat du jour perceives in me is a desirable debutante of wealth. That is ripe for the plucking, though there is still some need for stealth. My maker taught me well indeed, as I sweep across the ballroom, followed by the dastardly knave, blithely strutting to his doom. What do I feel as I rip his throat out? Well, nothing at all, sir, for I am dead. But I'm working to build my strength, so it might be my maker next instead.
amazing weaver, and this actually won the gold. The picture is for is very surreal almost. It's just a black earth with you can just barely see on the silhouette some trees kind of far in the distance, and the sun almost looks like it's exploding into a almost like an atomic bomb, but it's just kind of setting down and creating this kind of weary orange glow. And I just thought even her reading was absolutely amazing. Do you want to go first, Faison?
Sure. I have definitely heard this before, and I'm questioning myself now, like, did we do this on another show? But maybe I just listened to it just as someone who was reading it. I remember being struck that my natural reaction is it's a vampire story. It's talking about ripping out throats, talking about being awake at night and the cold skin and having a maker. So it's an interesting vampire story, but vampire stories are usually metaphorical if they're done right. And I get the sense that this is about more than vampires, too. Sometimes the night is an opportunity for people who maybe are shy, if they're not comfortable with crowds, if they prefer things kind of quiet and dark, then the night is when you have the freedom of, usually it's a little quieter, usually it's just, there's a different kind of feel to it, where maybe some people are more comfortable being awake and out. Now, of course, there's also the nightlife of, like, party kind of stuff, but that's not the impression that I have with this sentence here. Where is it? Whilst others may mourn this, the dying of the light, 'tis my release from hiding gives unto me the night. And I feel like it's like if you don't like a lot of attention, or if you just want to be in a more kind of, not hiding, but I don't know how to say it, but there's some people just feel like night is their time. So while most people are kind of like, oh, the sun's going down, the day is over, others just feel more awake. There tends to be less expectations for you at night. During the day, you know, you should be working, you should be doing whatever it is. And maybe you're tired during all that, but then at night, if you're awake, you don't necessarily have all those responsibilities. I mean, you still do, but there's less, I don't know, there's less judgment if you're just laying there relaxing. And there's a different feel to it. So this is a vampire story, but I feel like it's also about people who feel a little bit differently about the night, for whatever reason. And her read was excellent, of course. She's great at the audios.
Yeah, you took the exact words out of my mouth. I don't really have much more to add because you kind of literally took everything. But we might have read this one. This contest has actually been hanging around for about a month or so. So it's been a little while. We just never got to it. We might have read one or two, but we'll read them again if they were really good. Definitely not the whole contest, but like one or two we might have read. But I agree 100% everything you said, and I could really relate to it almost, like, not the vampire part, everybody relax over there, but the just the nighttime. A lot of times I do wait for it to go down and everything seems quiet. I mean, there's times when I go outside at night and I just kind of stand there, just kind of almost letting my energy kind of subside and really absorbing the peace and quiet. I've written a lot about before the light is being, you know, the daytime just being noisy and busy, and there's so much going on. Whereas the nighttime, you can kind of just relax. There's only a few inputs, you know, coming into you. And I agree. I think it's about both things. It's a little bit of a vampire story, but then has that, you know, undertone of people just, you know, feeling more comfortable there in the night. So absolutely. So excellent for everybody there. So let's fly along. When you're done with Faison, just for logistics here, when you're done with all the ones that you've posted, I'll go through and I'll pick out any other ones that we haven't done for this contest. I have the contest up here so we can make sure we don't miss them.
Sounds good.
Cool.
This, This one didn't actually say which prompt it was for, so I could be reading it the wrong time. But it's for that contest. It's by Fabrice D. It's called Glorious Sun. Along the old town, where hang from hovels the shutters, shelter of secretive lusts, when the cruel sun strikes with redoubled strokes on the city and fields, on the roofs, on the crops, I will exercise alone my fancy sword, smelling in all parts the chances of a rhyme, and stumbling on words as on cobblestones, sometimes colliding with long-awaited lines. Our foster father, Chlorosis Enemy, awakens in the fields verses like roses towards the heavens. He makes fade worries and fills brains and hives with unctuous honey. He is he who revives the bearers of crutches and makes them cheerful and sweet as maidens and commands the harvest to grow and ripen in the undead heart that still wants to flourish. When, like a poet, he goes down to cities, he ennobles the fate of the vilest things, sans noise nor valet, breaking in like a king in all hospitals and all palaces. End poem.
Great read. Fabrice has an interesting style about him. I really like his poetry a lot, and just a beautiful tribute to the sun, just the whole thing being personified, I really enjoyed, almost covering all different aspects. I do like the beginning part there along the old town where hang the hovels, the shutters, shelter of secretive lust, so it's almost like a nighttime, everybody's kind of hiding there in the house, they're doing what they're supposed to be doing, and all of a sudden the sun comes, kind of breaks them out of that, okay, you got to get up, you got to go out in the world. And then, what was it here? Our foster father. So I love that idea of the father as the son and the father as the son, S-U-N, and the, maybe the mother is the earth or the water, and that's kind of where we came from. So our foster father, Chlorosis Enemy, awakens in fields versus like roads towards the heavens, makes fade worry. So now the sun's coming. Revives the bearer of crutches, makes them cheerful and sweet as maidens, so gives everybody all this love. And then one like a poet goes down to the cities and ennobles the fate of the vilest things, sans noise nor valets, breaks in like a king. And the sun does that, right? It comes out and you can't hide from it. It just kind of opens you up to the world. And those sunny days, it's almost like it just makes everything beautiful. So I really, I liked his, it's almost this kind of godlike perception of the sun that's just doing all these kind of things. I always found it really interesting when you not the Disney version of the Greek gods, right? But you look at the other version of the gods, and sometimes they're good and sometimes they're just bad. And he almost grabs that to me. I'm thinking like an old time, ancient, godlike power that he's giving to the sun, where it kind of does what it wants, which is that powerful. So excellent. And he does have chlorosis. He does define for a deficiency of chlorophyll in green plants caused by mineral deficiency, in other words, lack of light. So where is the line that he said that? Oh, our foster father, Chlorosis Enemy. That was very interesting. Great word choice. So yeah, Aphasiana. What do you think of the glorious sun?
I was really glad that he defined that, because it was one that I was going to look up, because I wasn't totally sure about, like, chlorosis definitely sounded like a sickness to me, like something about anything that ends in osis. I expect it to be like sclerosis or something. So that it's a plant sickness is interesting. And that the light protects you from it. The sun prevents it, makes it really cool, Chlorosis Enemy. It's such a good way of wording it. It's not like you're saying it's nourishing to the plants. You're saying it's going to stop the rot. It's going to prevent and protect against something rather than just purely, provide something. It's a different kind of take on it. And interesting that it's foster father, not just father. I find that interesting. I like stumbling on words as on cobblestones. Because cobblestones are very pretty, but they're also, like, if you're clumsy like me, you totally trip on them. And, like, if you're on, like, a skateboard or anything like that, it's quite bumpy and harder to stay in a straight line. So to stumble on your words as on cobblestones is a really cool way of putting that. Not too often I see cobblestones around here. I know in Europe it's much more common. But I like the idea of your words kind of, like, you know, not like fully falling over, but just kind of like having the bumps of trying to navigate something. I feel like my words are always on cobblestones. Very nicely done.
Yeah, we have a few cobblestones here in Boston, some cobblestone streets. There's a famous street, Acorn Street, which is supposedly the most photographed street in the United States. If you look up Acorn Street, it's an old cobblestone street. And I think I probably tripped on it a few times walking up and down it, so I totally get that. If anybody wants to call in, by the way, we're always welcome for guests. The number is 515-605-9826, and you can call in and read and participate. You can just call in and say hi, make a comment, whatever you'd like to do. But we're always happy to have people join. All right, cool. And we're also happy to keep moving on here, and it looks like we have my good friend Scott Sharp that we're going to read, and I think it's my turn, is it not?
It is.
All right, Scott. This one is called Distance. Distance divides the sun and moon, time torn from eternity, darkness peeled from the skin of a dying star, limits the sparrow's flight, the direction of the wind like feathers float, flounder, the earth misinterpretations. The virgin plunges into the middle of the night, dark sea. Swim like an abandoned sun, unceremoniously, spiderwebs of hope spool and spin into the night, lonely. Three-wheeled red wagon, abandoned, waiting for the earth to move beneath it. End poem.
Very cool poem. I find it intriguing where there's the parts that are in brackets. So some lines like the sparrow flight, dark sea, three-wheeled red wagon, pardon me, there's the cobblestones of my brain. And it has those in parentheses as if thing different about it. And same with flounder and the myths of misinterpretations. So it's like those are kind of like actions or context rather than a smooth part of everything else. Really interesting to make it stand out like that, especially because the theme here and the title is distance. So it's like there's a distance between the sections as you have those things to break it up. But there's not actually a space between stanzas. The distance is made by the words there. Something about darkness peeled from the skin just, like, makes my skin crawl a little bit. So that part I just naturally kind of cringe. I'm like, oh, you're going to peel my skin off, which is just a weird reaction. I liked time torn from eternity. Where is it now? Like an abandoned sun is also interesting, because abandoned son, as in your child, would be S-O-N, and here we have S-U-N, which goes with the pictures. But I think it's definitely a play on words, where we're thinking about an abandonment of the person, but also the celestial body, which how do you abandon it? Other than maybe choosing not to be there when it's out. Maybe being there at night is your way of abandoning the sun. I feel like this takes more thinking than I have time to do right now. What did you think, Dan?
It absolutely does. You know, Scott has an amazing way of putting in. It's, I think it's probably why I like his stuff. He writes kind of like me, like, or at least the ideas. He has a lot of scientific things in there and a lot of almost just abstract ideas, which I absolutely love how he does that. And that distance that divides the sun and moon, there's a poem called Between the Sun and Moon by Pai Dubois, or poet Pai Dubois, and he says there's a lake between the sun and moon not too many know about. And he kind of talks about the distance between other things like actors and acting and weird distances that don't really have distances. And Scott's almost channeled that. I don't know if he did it on purpose for that. It's, you know, Pai Dubois is a obscure poet, but he's almost saying the same thing to me, where he's just kind of seeing the distance in everything, in the direction of the wind, like feathers float around, but the direction is there. Distance is a very, very strange thing, right? Because the distance right now for me to my keyboard is nothing, because it's right there. But if I was handicapped, the distance could be an eternity. I couldn't reach it. You know, so distance is just, as Einstein says, it's relative to, you know, where you are. So swim like an abandoned sun, unceremoniously, spider webs of hope spool and spin into the night. It's interesting how distance can still be can be hope, right? How, how far away does hope seem sometimes when you're hopeless, right? Hope can be if you, you know, let's say you're walking through the desert and all of a sudden you see a lake. There's your hope and you can reach it. But if you're walking through the desert and you don't see a lake, your hope could seem distant, like a million years from now, a million miles from now. So really interesting. In fact, Scott, you've completely inspired me to write about distance, not as physical distance, but as just other things of distance. So you just totally, totally inspired me. Amazing, my friend. Great job. All right, let's crank along here.
So we have a new caller. May I ask who's calling?
Ooh.
Hi. I'm Shannon. I was calling, and I didn't even know. I hope I didn't intrude. I didn't even know if I could call in today, or I had this number from, I think, another contest, and I said, oh, shoot, did I miss it? And then I said, well, I want to call and see what happens, and I didn't even know there was the show going on or not. I don't even know what I'm doing, tell you the truth.
I love it. Well, you're welcome anyway.
Yeah, we're just reading some
really
poetry.
Glad to be here.
And, yes,
yeah.
Welcome.
We're just here to have fun. Absolutely. Are you? So what you can do is you can just listen, or you can do whatever you like. But are you part of the late night poets group? Because you can read the poems.
I think so. I tried to be. I hope I still am. Looks like I'm only on one group. I'm looking at my all poetry profile right now. I used to be on it, but it's not showing my groups. Where's my groups? I used to be, and I can be again, and I'd love to be.
Well, let's do this just to save some time. Can you? So I'm Daniel Deschino on here. Do you want to just kind of ping me and say hi, and I will post I'll post the poems right to you, so you can follow along.
Okay, that'd be perfect. What do I do? How do I do that?
Just go up to, this should be a little search bar on the very top, and type in
Daniel?
My name, Daniel Deschino, yep.
How do you
and
spell Deschino?
just put in D-I-S, Daniel D-I-S, and if you hit it, it should come up.
Okay. Samuel Daniel, famous poet. Oh, let's see. Daniel Dis. Oh, there you are, Daniel Deschino. Oh, I see you.
Yep.
Oh, okay.
All right.
You
so
kind of look like
you
kind of look like Scarface. Sorry. That's a compliment.
And I
think
I,
Al Pacino is really sexy. Okay.
And I talk just like him too. Right, so
gosh! Wow.
I can't believe I can't remember who read Scott's. I read Scott's, didn't I?
You did.
All right, so you can read Betty's, and I will post it. I will post Betty's to Sharon's, and then we can go from there.
Okay, sounds good. Sunlight's Embrace, number 5392, by Betty Page. Sleeping in on Sunday's sweet, kissed awake by warmest light, bright, vivid colors surround, sunlight's embrace caressing, cozy, soft, feels hypnotized, sends me off into my dreams. Secret gardens, perfect day, wanders towards deep, dark forests, where fairy tale dreams come true. Melodic birds start chirping. I draw close, jet black curtains. Sleep until the sun has set. Rainbows melt into starlight. Pink moon above shimmering. A sweet dream within a dream. And poem.
Amazing. And I didn't get your ping yet, Sharon. So if you want to do that, I can post the poem in a second. But I'll comment while you're doing that. So
okay.
I need to do the math. I need to do the math, but I'm not going to do it while we're on the show here. I'm guessing 5,392 is maybe the days that she's been alive. I'm guessing that's what she did, so I'll have to count.
No, it's how many poems she's written. She adds a number beside each
poem.
Oh,
is it? Wow. All right, so Betty, you're way ahead of me. I think I'm at like 500-something, so I got a long time to go. Oh, that's right, she does. She puts the number every time. Excellent. Thanks, Faziana. So sunlight
I really like
race
that poem.
Is really... Yeah, absolutely. Did you want to comment first, or do you want me to try to send it to you?
Can I?
Of course.
Oh, I would love to. I mean, her name's Betty Page?
Yes, and I just posted to you.
Oh, okay. Well, I was listening, and I was, like, trying to catch all the words that really stood out in my mind as she was reading. And Betty, if you're listening, then I think that poem's really romantic, very romantic. There were so many word choices that just emphasize the wonder of romance and, you know, I wrote the words that just, like, seem to scream romantic fantasy, like sunlight embrace. I could see, like, just the rays just, like, going around someone's body and just how, you know, how loving the visual of that is. And then secret gardens, oh, my God, of course I love that story, but whenever I hear the phrase secret gardens, it just, like, it's so romantic. And then melodic birds and the rainbows and the starlit and melting into the starlight, I mean, stars and melting rainbows. It was just so filled with wonder and romance, and it was very, I thought, very, you know, very hopefully romantic.
Yeah, absolutely. Great comment. And I'm guessing, so I was definitely wrong with the years because I just did the math and Betty would be 14. And I'm guessing she's older than 14. So that's definitely not days. But great comment. And yeah, exactly. I liked it. I loved it too. I love Betty's work. And just the like you said, the romance and the mystique that she put around the sunlight, and given the sunlight as an embrace, because it really is, right? I mean, it does kind of protect us and warm us all the time. Melodic birds start chirping. I draw close to jet black curtains until the sun has set. Rainbows melt into starlight. I mean, she really just romanticizes the whole idea of sun here. And then sunlight's embrace caressing, cozy, soft, feels hypnotized, sends me off into my dreams. It's all, you know, that makes me think of my cat who falls asleep in the sun, but, oh, hey, he's actually here with me right now. But, you know, also me too. I mean, you know, how have you ever, you know, lied on the beach, right, and the sun just kind of warms you? Or just even on a summer day, you're just sitting in the grass, and it's just so comforting. So I loved all those feelings that she brought out, Betty, and you do that a lot in your poetry. So great job, beautiful. Anna Faziana, what do you think?
To me, it seems like she enjoys the sun in the morning, and then she sleeps away the afternoon, and then she can enjoy the night as well. So she has, like, the best of both worlds, because it starts off kissed awake by the warmest light, which is just absolutely beautiful, the sun coming in the window and just, like, hitting you just right, so you have that warmth of wanting to wake up. It makes me think about camping, something about when the sun comes up and you're camping, you have that kind of embraced by the sun feeling. But then she sleeps until the sun has set, and she gets to enjoy the moon as well. Having that kind of like split shift of a day where you get to enjoy the sun's embrace and the moon's embrace is just really, like, really well done. And it's intimate in it. It has a sensuality, even though it's not necessarily talking about two people. It's just being alive in your senses, which Betty's really good at writing about.
She is, she is. All right, and we can crank along here.
All right, our next one is by Naomi Sarah.
And Sharon, do you want to give that a read? I will send it to you, if you don't mind.
I would love to, sure.
All right. And I just sent it to you, so whenever you... Yes.
Okay, Naomi Sarah. Okay, The Edge of a New Day by Naomi Sarah. My eyes smile, and breathing deepens as God gratifies rainbow flame to heather upon evening's brow like poetry and soft rolling verses, spreading as a settled heart along the horizon, as if the sky itself could speak of love. Orangey reds paving the blacktop streets in the colors of fire hearths and dripping tangerines the city air, almost sweet and floral as the pace of living relaxes to a steadier rhythm. Lights flickering alive like a lamp-lit runway as I whisper to my pilot to make ready, collecting my boarding pass for the land of dreams. As the edge of the clouds glow with white patches, like turning pages, catching the sun scribbled with the written promise of a shiny new day, a gift given anew. An approaching dawn with life blooming out of the darkness, speckled gold piercing through black as pale corn exploding from freshly turned ground, warmth springing from the cold.
Excellent, Sharon. Great read, and you have a great voice for this this specific poem, I think. Happy that people really embrace this one. I always get a the picture for those who can't see is the one people were doing before, where it's kind of on the city street and everything's basically blurred out a little by the sun, and the sun's rays are almost shooting out like, I don't want to say like daggers, but you can see them, and that those rays always fascinate me. And the another, you know, kind of romance of the sun that we have here from Naomi, who's such a great poet. I really like the as God graffitis rainbow flame to heather upon an evening's brow. So the sun coming out and doing the rays is like God graffitiing, like God kind of putting his mark on the world, which I thought was a really interesting and beautiful way to put it. Orangey reds paving the black top streets in the colors of the fire hearths and dripping tangerines in the air, lights flickering alive like a lamplit runway. So it's, she really took the sun and kind of, in a very interesting way, I don't even want to say personified it, like humanized it. So had the sun kind of doing things that humans are doing, paving the streets and lighting lamps, and like turning pages, catching the sun, scribble with a written promise. So it's writing, it's graffitiing. The sun is doing things that humans do, but in its own way. I thought that was just such an interesting way to describe
the way the
sun is. I
like how you put
that. Yeah, well, I didn't put it that way. Naomi did. But yeah, I appreciate it. I will say I've been inspired. Scott inspired me, and well, they all did. But now Naomi, you totally inspired me to write something with that kind of a. I never really thought about that type of, again, not personifying but humanizing the way something happens. So, yeah, amazing. That was beautiful, Naomi. And Afasiana, we'll go to you.
Well, you pointed out my favorite parts. Again, the graffiti, the idea of, like, sketching the rainbows across the sky. And I like that it's upon the evening's brow. It's like there's a tattoo above the eyebrow now. And the dripping tangerines. I love that as talking about color, as the the sky does tend to have like these streaks that go down when it's right around sunset, and like just dropping tangerines is just a beautiful way of picturing it. And the boarding pass to the land of dreams, another creative way of doing it. I like the imagery of nature that's put in here, but you're right, it is almost personified and in the way that it does it. And that part about writing a promise of the new day is another one of my favorite parts here. So it's just beautiful in general. It really brings it to life.
Excellent. Cool. Yeah, you and I are on the same wavelength of, I think we're finishing as others are thinking the same things tonight. I like that. And Sharon, you got to read it. What do you think?
Yeah, I really love the tone of this, and it was very easy to read, which I love when a poem does that, when it makes it just easy to read, especially the way she presented it on the page. It was really nice to read it. It just, and it was like sometimes you read something and you can't, like, see what you're reading. You're just reading the words, but you can't. But she was able to get the imagery going with the pace of her poem and the imagery in my mind even as I was reading it. And I'm looking at the photograph. I mean, I know, you know, on the radio show you don't see the photograph, but as I'm seeing what she connected the photograph with her words, and I'm just thinking about how, like, those rays that you mentioned, those rays shooting from the sun and on a typical type of city street, you know, pavement with cement and snow, and you know, you think of the citizens or the people that, you know, you said it, the sun was humanized, but it's so, and that's such a great way of putting it, because it is more than personification. It's more like, you know, you're in a city and the people are just probably just, you know, doing the typical stuff like complaining about the snow or complaining about the traffic or complaining about their feet hurting, you know, from walking the cement or whatever. And yet here is this miracle, this beautiful miracle of life that just shines through all of that and just like sparkles these amazing light, beams of light through all of our, you know, our typical nonsense, you know, just to scream at us like, we're alive, you know, not just the person or the sun, but all of it. And it's just amazing. It was really, really well done. I props to Naomi for such a great connection to that visual.
Yeah, that's a great comment. And I probably complained about all those things as I was walking down this very street. I probably did. But that's a great way to put it, and I think you captured the essence of what she was saying, you know, of the beautiful, and look at, you know, notice these things, people. Don't just kind of go through your life. It's a great comment. Cool. All right. And life moves on. So what are we doing?
Dan, will you please read the one by Jenny the Deep?
I will. And let me send it to my new best friend, Sharon, here, and then I will gladly do that.
Are you flirting? You better stop it. No.
Oh, no. Always and never.
Oh, I love that. That's a great reply. Thank you.
Of course. All right, I sent it to you. And this is called Rising Like the Sun by Jenny the Deep. Don't let me bring me down. Like the sun, help me to rise again. My effervescent illumination is fading. Like the sun, when its optimistic glow diminishes, every excruciating, pessimistic summer evening. Help me to find my inner sunlight. Life doesn't wait for anyone, like the orbiting sun doesn't wait to rise. Let me be the sunshine rising brighter than ever, running up the hill of obstacles, racing the fading light, afraid it will disappear indefinitely. Paranoia making me forget that one day, just like the glorious, magnificent marigold sun, I shall rise again out of this black hole of life. Let my true auras of red, yellow, and violet shine through the mountains, down to the valley, never to permeate, permanently set, until my dying day when I'm to fly above the horizon. End poem. Beautiful poem, Jenny. And we can start with you, Sean.
Well, I mean, gosh, she just sort of pointed a finger at me. I feel really like a heel after hearing such words of praise to life and the spirit of hope, and just such a beautiful soul she has emanated through these words. I mean, she says it humbly, help me to find my inner sunlight. And yet the whole poem radiates her inner sunlight because she's got humility going on. She's got such a appreciation for and wisdom of knowing that even the hard times are just temporary. And I haven't been, oh my God, I'm kind of choked up because I have not been able to do this at all. I have been in an extreme sort of funk. And just her optimism. She says, when its optimistic glow diminishes, oh my God, do I know that? I mean, that really hits me. Like, diminishes the optimistic glow. But yet this whole poem just, like, glows of optimism. And I'm I don't know whether to be jealous or just, you know, cheerlead for her.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that you were in a funk, but you know what? Get the funk out of here.
that's
what you're on the
life.
Show for. That's right. And you come on here, and we'll help you forget everything. So great comment.
Great. I like that.
Absolutely. So great comment sharing. Faiz, what's going on with you?
I'm also touched by Jenny's optimism. She has a glow about her in many of her poems, and you definitely see it here. I liked the choice of effervescent illumination. I thought that was nice. And the idea of pessimistic being excruciating, she just has really great ways of describing it. And there's a little bit of alliteration with the magnificent marigold that I enjoyed. You know, it's subtle, but she plays with her words a little bit and just has this happy glow even when she's questioning about whether it's still there, whether she has that. She does have that strength of self-love in this poem. And even the title, Rising Like the Sun, it's just empowering. It, like, makes us want to stand up and feel the sun the way that she does. I think it's beautiful.
Absolutely. Sorry, I was mutating there. Is that, I don't know if that's Jenny or Faiziana, if you can put mute on. This is some noise in the background.
Sorry.
That might have been me. No, that's okay. No problem at all. If Pam was here, she would tell you, or Faiz could probably tell you, I'm the king of extra noise by mistake. I'm getting better, though.
Sorry about that. I didn't even know you could hear that.
We can, but, you know, I have to tell him to stop typing all the time. So whenever I'm not speaking, I'm on mute, which is sometimes why there's a delay before I answer, because I have to unmute myself.
That's so funny.
Yes,
that's so weird how sensitive it is. That's cool. Thanks for letting me know.
Yeah, of course. I'm getting better, though, Faiziana. I'm getting a little better with it. I've learned how to mute. So I liked her optimism, too, but I like that she's also not optimistic, like pessimistic, like I'm in trouble here. Don't let the sun bring me down. Help me be like the sun, you know. So she's having a problem here, you know. So far we've had a lot of poems that were just, you know, just beauty and just this, but she's having a problem in looking to the sun for help. Help me find my inner sunlight, you know. She's almost like a prayer, this is, to the sun. Let my auras of yellow, of red, yellow, and violet shine through the mountains down to the valley. So there is some despair there, and she's looking to be like the sun. The sun is giving motivation, and that's almost a metaphor for all depression, I think. I'm very in tune with the sun. When it's cloudy out, I feel myself just tired. You know, I really do, and I get almost depressed. And when the sun's out, I have more energy. I'm very in tune to that, so I can relate again to this almost being a metaphor for depression itself. Of not being in the dark, gloomy kind of gray days, get me out into the brighter light days where I can feel happy and cheerful. So awesome as always, Jenny. Thank you.
I'm such a freak because I am the opposite. I find the sun like oppressive, and when it's cloudy, I feel like I can like breathe better. So of course I live in
I relate
like,
to
sunny
that.
Okanagan.
I relate to that. Yeah, no, I relate to that. And that was something growing up I couldn't understand with some of the people that I grew up with. They would get so depressed during the gray days. And it was the gray days when I would have the most fun because I wasn't like she said, what was the word? You just used that word, like bombarded by the sun, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's weird, so because it's just different kind of reactions to it, you know.
Yeah, the sunlight is too much, you know. If you're walking
sometimes,
so much input. There's like every single thing you're looking at, and every noise. And at nighttime, it's just quieter. There's only a couple of things to look at.
I find it easier to breathe.
Yeah.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Do we have more from this contest?
Not from that contest, no. Did you have more that you wanted to add before we move on to the next one?
I'm pretty sure that you actually did all of them. I didn't see anything else that you missed, so yeah, we can go on to the next one.
All right, so the next prompt is another picture that Dan took, I believe, and it is on the water. You can see the trees and vegetation in the distance. And there is a bird. Is that a crane? What kind of bird is that?
I think it's a crane or a heron. Some people have called it different things. This is literally on the side of the road in Woburn, Massachusetts, for anybody who has any idea.
Wow.
What that is. It was just I just saw this kind of like neat little swamp area, and I went to take a picture, and the little crane sitting there, and the picture came out nice, and just kind of a random thing, but I thought it was really neat. The way that crane or stork, it might be a stork, was which is kind of posed there, and the way it's almost like just a black silhouette. So yeah, that's what it is.
All right, so that was our prompt, and the first writer is Ben Hart, who tends to break my heart every time in his poems. I love his poems, but if I cry halfway through, I'm sorry. Ben, this is Come Alive, part one. Now is change. The past is still changing, like a painting unfinished after framing, because everything is now, and some people have always been here. Whatever the time to act as guides for those new souls braving the climb. Come alive from the warmest dim into light, and speak first in weeping and in limb, then in words, when the music begins. And it's not a door. Tomorrow, then someday, change and chance. Not something to push at or overcome. It's a mirror through which things sneak until you see in ocular overdoses they are not the same. Healed, have the cuts from the roses. It's all the stream, the reed adrift, delivering Moses. So the boy may live to give hope another chance. Part two, false weight. Human being, where did you go? What is there worth seeing in such a breathless life? When no one cares and you're still screaming, why won't they talk to me? Am I such a poor listener? Or is this just not my sign? And have I laid false claim to the clouds, stars, the rain, to the way she says my name? Human being, does it ever outweigh the will to look up? Gravity? Human being, stop running. There's nothing nefarious coming after you. Death is not some cold ravishing, but more of a welcoming vanishing into the blue. And pull.
Great read. That was awesome. And I'll comment because I was another bad host again and sent Sharon the poem late, so give her a chance to look at it. I found this. I have a feeling with this poem that we're going to, which a lot of times it bends, that we're going to see different things. We're all going to see kind of different. And for those who are new to Ben's poetry, he pretty much writes, I think I've seen this picture before, though. He might have used it before. I'm not sure. But he paints his own pictures, so usually he has his own pictures and usually specifically for the poems that he adds. So the artwork that you see on there is by him also. I'm assuming that's a self-portrait of him. So he's, to me, this is a very interesting way to see the picture. So the picture is more like it's actually like a swamp, but it can totally be taken as a river. And I took this as a journey, like he was seeing himself as kind of journeying down a river, journeying down life, and seeing these different things. And definitely some, you know, at least some biblical references there, because you're talking about it's all the stream, the reed adrift, delivering Moses so the boy may live to give another chance. And that's, you know, the story of Moses kind of floating down the river as a baby. And so we saw that, and it does. The picture does have a little bit of an old worldly, almost Egyptian, a feel to it. I can see that, but he's taking this journey, kind of almost through his whole life, and just kind of looking at everything, come alive from the warmest din into light and speak first in weeping and in limb, then in words where the music begins. How amazing is that? You know, first in weeping and in limb, then in the words when the music begins. And I love the idea of all words being song. You know, I once in college, a music professor who defined music as the combination of sound and silence. So not notes, not chords, not instruments, just the combination of sound and silence. And that just goes to that music is everything, right? Every noise can be music. So even just the words, like right now, you know, you could argue that I'm singing, that I'm spouting music by just saying these words, right? It's just your definition of it. So calling words as music, I thought was beautiful. But we could sit here and analyze almost every stanza that Ben has. So I will, but I won't take up the whole show with Ben. I wish we could, Ben. Someday we will, I think. But I like the journey that he took. I thought it was just really well done and just a really unique take on the prompt. Awesome, awesome, Ben. Sharon, would you like to comment?
Well, I have read Ben's poems before, and I'm a fan. I think this is just really great. I love the emphasis on the now. He mentions it a couple different times in the poem, and he even gives some praise to the people who are now type of people, where he says, because everything is now, and some people have always been here. Here, like, meaning now is like a place to him. Like, everything is now, and some people have always been here. I love that emphasis, because some people, you know, I don't know. It's like people who are living in the past or living in the future are always, and I'm guilty of this. I've done this plenty of times in my life, and I'm still struggling with it, but I believe him. I really believe him that now is the most important time or place. And I just, you know, I'm so glad that he kind of carried that theme through it, through the whole journey of it. Like, I mean, whether he was talking about the past as we were born, or whether he's talking, or as he was born, or whether he was talking about tomorrow, whatever time he was talking about, he was looking at it from the now. And it was just, I love that. I really do. I really love that.
Yeah, that's a great comment. You know, like I said, my prediction was correct. We're going to see different things on it. I love that take that you had. That was great. I could almost, Aphasiana, hear you weeping at the end. I think Ben brings out a lot of emotion in you. Was I right about that?
I didn't cry this time.
Okay.
You know, Ben has a way of talking about anxiety and depression and suicide and things that kill me. But this is just intriguing. I love it, but I didn't cry. I really like the section that says, and it's not a door, tomorrow, then someday, change and chance, not something to push at or overcome, it's a mirror through which things sneak. I think that part applies to the picture, because there's the above the water world, and then there's the in the water world, and there's reflections in the image. You can see the bird twice. You can see a lot of the plant life reflected in the water. And so that's the kind of the mirror. And it's not that they are, you know, whole other worlds. The the past and the future and the present are all connected. You don't have to try to like push your way to now it's the weekend. Now it's the when I'm older and have whatever I need. You don't skip the in between. You have to experience it. And when you're looking at something like this image, it's not a whole other world. It's a mirror in that it tells you about yourself. You see yourself in the reflection, and you have to face yourself to be able to get to the tomorrow. And then when it says ocular overdoses, I love that because I have, like, stimulation issues. I get sensory overload, and I just love the phrasing there, ocular overdoses. Now when I have, like, too many colors or whatever is causing me to have a breakdown, I'm going to call it ocular overdoses. I'm stealing that. that is now my new sensory overload phrasing, ocular overdoses. There's another part. Oh, there's always a million parts. Ben, I love you. I love your writing. I want to, like, teach a class about your poetry at some time. Or have you teach it.
Absolutely. Ben is, we all love Ben. Cool. All right, Ben, thank you very much as always. And we're gonna as much as we don't want to, we're going to move on from Ben because I'm sure there's other great poetry.
There are. We have Robert J. Tice. And I have lost track of who. I think I read the Ben one, didn't I?
And then, yeah, I think, and then Sharon, you read, I can't remember. Sharon, do you want to read one? You're the guest. You can
yeah,
read one.
Yeah, I would love to read one.
Let me put
one.
This one up. I can't remember where we are either, but we'll let our guest read one. Let me send it to you here. Let me be a good
I
host.
I think it is her turn.
A second. I think it is, too. By the way, I want since Sharon's on here, I just looked up your profile and you have a book out there. I'm going to pick it up, I think. So everybody should check out.
It's not totally me. It's a collaboration, just so that you know.
Oh, it's collaboration.
It's a collaboration of AP poets. So I just have one poem in there.
Oh well, I'll still definitely pick it up then. That sounds fun.
It's a pretty good one. It's pretty good. Yeah, I love the AP poets.
Here.
I love the AP poets. I've been with AP for a long time, and I just find this community, you know, one of my favorite online communities.
Absolutely, absolutely. All right, cool.
Me
so
too.
This is by Robert J. Tice. Yeah, absolutely. I love this place. So Robert J. Tice, if you want to read that one once it comes up, that would be
yeah,
cool.
I'm trying to find the link. I see the last one that came up was the Ben Hart one, so I'm not finding the link yet.
Oh, Dan, you posted it in the group instead of to her.
I did. I'm sorry.
No
at least
worries.
Once the show, Faziana has to slap me silly to get me back to normal. So
I think I've got
and,
it
you know,
now. Effortless. Okay. I think I've got it now.
There we go.
All right. Effortless by Robert J. Tice. Okay. Still heron by the teeming stream. You seem reflective, quiet, calm, so stately yet exempt from means. More meditative than I'd be when I search for serenity, then find myself preoccupied with business elsewhere, memories. It must be mostly effortless, as clear as water to you. Yes, this life I tend to overthink. Existence could be free as flight, instinctive, boundless, natural, not fraught with obstacles, restraints, the pressures of possessions kept. You thrive beyond such weighty things. That's how you can soar off, away, wherever you would turn at will, while I rush homeward, check missed calls, review the to-do lists, overlook the easy beauty of this earth. Without one word, you teach me peace.
Excellent read, and I gave this, Robert got the gold for this one, and it really just, when I was reading it, I could so picture just this, you know, you see everybody, I mean, I do it all the time, you're wrapped up in your world, you don't get to, you're not really paying attention to things, right, and you're just so wound up, or your days go by. One of my least favorite phrases of all time was when people say, well, it makes the day go by fast. Why does anybody ever want their days to go by fast? I hate that thing. And I just pictured this guy, you know, sitting there and walking by and kind of seeing the scene and just having almost like a revelation, you know, like, why am I, like, look at this bird that's just so happy sitting there. He doesn't have these pressures. He doesn't have to answer emails. He doesn't have to, you know, pay his taxes and clean the house and drive here. He doesn't have to do these things, right? I actually remember a conversation a long time ago at this job I worked at. Me and this guy were sitting in a room, and we were just all stressed out over the stuff we had to do. And he turns and says, "Look at that squirrel." He said, "All he cares about is gathering nuts and chasing girl squirrels. Like, why can't I do that?" And I remember that because he was making a joke, but I'm like, you know, I remember, yeah, you know, why do we? Like we're so busy with stuff that, you know, it's true. So I pictured this guy sitting there having this kind of revelation of, you know, really being moved by just seeing this bird and the peace that he is. And like he says at the very end, without one word, you teach me peace. You know, you show me to just exist and enjoy just being alive.
I kind of got that feel from Robert
when he read it. So I thought that was. I thought that was great. Great job, Robert. Well-deserved gold, in my opinion, I think.
Wow.
Since you got to read it, let's go with Faye the Honor, and then we'll go to you, Sharon. So, Faye.
Sure.
What do you think?
I really love it. Like, I feel the tranquility just reading this. And I think that it catches on to why people feel that connection to nature. Like, most weekends in the summer, I go camping, and I try to completely unplug when I camp. I'll be gone from my Part Center, Part Saint show quite a bit this summer because I just need to be outside. And it definitely it creates that peacefulness because your heartbeat starts to match the sounds of the things. And to watch a creature who is so, like, at one with the nature, who is just feeling the water and moving with the current just naturally or flying on the wind, it makes you take your mind off of things. If I try to meditate purposely, I end up worrying about 1,000 things. But to watch a creature just have that calm brings you into that calm. So I think that Robert captured that feeling because it says, more meditative than I'd be when I search for serenity. If you're trying to get it, then you're thinking about thinking and it just becomes like a spiral. But to be able to just see this moment and be in it is totally different. And he really captured the beauty of that feeling. Well done, Robert.
Absolutely, I agree. When I was framing the picture, I was trying to do it like it is, where the bird was in the blue, and it was just a silhouette. So it's very, very simple lines of the bird. Everything else is very complex, and the shadows and this stuff, and it's just a silhouette of a bird being extremely simple and calm. And that's I thought he captured that beautifully. So thanks, Faye, on a great comment. And Sharon, what do you think?
Well, I'm looking at the title of the poem, and I'm really glad that this was chosen as the gold winner because I can see why. I can definitely see why. I think the title really says a lot with one word, effortless. I mean, that's just something that sounds so heavenly. Just that one word sounds so heavenly, doesn't it? Effortless. I mean, just to accomplish anything without effort just sounds like such a heavenly way. It sounds like such a heavenly way. And even the poem, you know, I don't know what if this was a difficult poem for Robert to write or if this just was effortless for him to write as he was contemplating the heron. But it's such a wonderful poem because he's taken the natural aspects of what he was, you know, looking at or visualizing and mirrored the heron also, even though he's like pointing out the differences, you know, where he finds his himself preoccupied with business elsewhere or memories. But how does he know, how does he really know that the heron doesn't do the same thing in a heron type of way? You know, I mean, he's looking at the herons and he says, he seems so reflective, quiet, and calm. But how do we know that that's not exactly what Robert was while he was looking at the heron? He could have been exactly like the heron, reflective, quiet, and calm. And then you know, that he's saying, but you're more meditative to the heron, he's saying. You're more meditative because I would be preoccupied. Well, yeah, but then again, he could write this poem effortless, just like the heron staying there and being, just being the heron was effortless. But just being Robert seems effortless as I read this poem.
Interesting. Yeah, he has a great, great, interesting, you know, style to him, as everybody does here. So thanks, Robert, and awesome comment. Cool. All right, we're moving on, and I think it's my turn to read.
It is, and somehow when it's your turn, you always get Jenny. But you do a great job with Jenny's poem, so you are on Jenny the Deep.
All right, Jenny, let's do it. This is called Swimming Away from Her Deceit. Alone with my thoughts, my reflection shining off the pond, wondering where the time has gone, where in life do I belong? Reaching my hand in the water, frozen in fear, I begin to wonder, why did I ever let her steer the wheel in the wrong direction? Too in shock to feel, standing on a slippery slope, losing all faith and hope. She is out getting away with deceit, as I die inside, melting with the guilt's heat. Knowing too much is where I went wrong. Should have told her to end it all along. I wish I were a swan, majestic and free, swimming purposefully away from her ugly greed. End poem. And I don't want to give too much away, but I've spoken to Jenny a little bit, and she's been writing a lot of these poems, and she's having trouble with a friend who's being very deceitful and dishonest, and she hates to see her friend going through this. It's making her, she's going through a lot of emotions with that, and she's not sure how to deal with a friend to tell her. So she's been writing a lot of poems. Like, it's very interesting to me for Jenny that she's being influenced. It's like it's affecting her so much that it's, you know, she's influenced by so many different contests for that one thing. Like for this, she was influenced, it sounds like, from, you know, wanting to just, like she said, just being a swan, just being this bird where she can just kind of be majestic and fly away and just, you know, almost like Robert's poem, just exist and not have these worries. So, you know, it was a beautifully written poem, Jenny, as always, and I think it also, just all the poems you've been writing, just goes towards, you know, how sometimes things affect you so deeply that you really can't think of anything else, right? You just, without trying, you'd be obsessed by them. So whatever this thing she's going through, I think she's still obsessed by it and doesn't know how to help her friends, you know, get through this thing. And it's, you know, this, luckily, she's looking at it as kind of hope. Like, I wish I was this bird that could just kind of hang out in the swamp and just be and not have these worries I have. So, yeah, just a little insight, I believe, on what Jenny was writing about. So, very cool. Let's go with Sharon.
Oh, I just want to say that poem and the other one by Jenny really show that she just has a really lovely soul, a caring and compassionate soul. And when I read these poems like this, it reminds me of my better self, you know, my better days where I was writing more inspirational and hopeful and optimistic poems. And I really, it's not like, you know, poets go through phases, you know. I mean, some of them can stay consistent because they, you know, force it to be that certain style so that they can keep their fans happy. But I'm not like that in writing. And I think Jenny is one of those more consistent writers. It seems like that she has a certain personality that comes through in her poetry. It's like compassionate heart. And that's beautiful, you know. I mean, that's just plain beautiful. I guess comparing it to my own, I'm all over the place. I'm scatterbrained. And, you know, you just, one day I seem like the most compassionate person in the world, and the next day I'm just like, I sound like, you know, I'm a hater. And that's just me. I'm just very emotional like that, and I express emotions however they come. But she does this, like, caring thing, and she did it in the other poem as well, the other one that we read. And I think that's beautiful. I really think that's beautiful.
I agree. I think she is a very emotional, caring person, and it does come across in her poems. Thank you, Sharon.
Yeah.
And I go through phases, too, but I also go through Faziana's because I go through her once every couple of weeks. So, Faziana. Sorry. It's getting late. I had to put it out there. I didn't know what that means.
I don't know what you're saying there, but okay.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm rethinking saying that joke. It was.
It felt like a really terrible innuendo.
It might have been.
Telling your wife.
Everybody scratched the last 10 seconds of your life. Forget what happened. I'm rethinking that joke.
All right.
But anyway,
so
let's go on to loftier
subjects.
Back to
Jenny. Yes. I like the title, Swimming Away from Her Deceit. And it's kind of like acknowledging that sometimes you have to distance yourself a little bit from people who are going down the wrong path. And that can be really hard because sometimes it's someone you really care about and you want to be able to help them. And but sometimes it feels like you've gone down that wrong river trying to help them. And it says, why did I ever let her steer the wheel in the wrong direction? Too in shock to feel. And now she's found herself down the wrong path and has to swim away. And I think that the swimming is really working as a great metaphor for her. As seeing the reflection in the pond, having to look at herself and wondering if she's in the right situation now, herself, now that she's tried to be there to help someone. So the reflection, again, is coming from the picture, has quite a bit of reflection in it, and reflection tends to be something where, I mean, we use the word reflecting when we think about, like, thinking about ourselves, thinking about something that we've done. So not only is it a reflection where you have to face yourself, it's a abstract reflection where you have to think about yourself in different kind of facing yourself. And to have, to no longer go with the flow and swim purposefully away from the greed. I like that she put the word purposely. She's not just going to float along anymore. She is going to take control of her direction. This does still embody her compassion, but it has a little bit more of a boundaries kind of stance where you see her being empowered in maybe a different way, where now she's going to know that she has to set some limits. I like it.
Yeah, I like what you said about where you just kind of have to step away sometimes, and sometimes you really do. You know, there's only so much you can go through with things, right? And especially if you're like, she's blaming herself for whatever this other person's doing, right? Knowing too much where I went wrong. Should have told her to end it all along. So she's blaming herself and just needs to step away from it for a while. Just can't kind of take either the guilt or the watching this person go through this thing. So, yeah, great comment, Faziana. All right, you are in charge, so take us somewhere.
Okay, so now I have one by Garden Delights. This is A Slice of Serenity. Garden Delights. Poised as if deep in contemplation, on egret observes the lake of his birth. Lush green vegetation soars heavenward. Cattails below house waterfowl and alligators. Still waters mirror a robin's egg blue sky. The sum of these almost whispers, peace. Come sit a while. Let this unruffled presence permeate your soul. Lay down your troubles, worries, stressors. Bathe your spirit in the quiet mystique before you. What if you could gather up the sides of this scene, wrapping it inside brown paper and string, then bring it home whenever you need to. Unveil it. Drink it in. A difficult day at work, kids loud, disruptive. Unwrap your riches. Sit back. Breathe them in slowly. Let it transport you away into a mystical land. Perhaps you stand beside that egret, rooted in meditation, or have no thoughts at all. You could just be. End poem.
Amazing read, Ephesiana. Awesome, awesome. And I do love the peace that this poem is giving. Now, I will say, being the one that took it standing there, it was in a swamp. I do remember it being like 112 degrees out, and it's by the side of the road. There's cars going on, and I had parked kind of on the side and had to run almost across the street to take it. It's not a very peaceful place, even though what you're looking at. But photograph, you know, these places are everywhere, right? And it's that photo, and there are places like that in the middle of nowhere that are very peaceful. And I just love a lot of people are getting that out of this. That it just seems like this kind of calm, because everything is calm. The water's calm. You can see it. The bird is just standing there, egret or whatever it is. And I really like that idea of, you know, can I just take this home? You know, I wish I could just use that. And wouldn't that be great if these places, you know, we've all been to those places, right, where you're there and like, wow, this is such a beautiful scenery. Why do I have to leave here? I got to go home to my home. Why can't I just kind of stay here? Why can't this be like what I wake up to every day, right? Wherever you are, you know, Faziana's saying she's going to go on vacation a lot, go in the mountains, right, those beautiful scenery there. being in New England here, I remember going up to the White Mountains. I've done that many times, and you wake up in the hotel, and I look, and I just see the mountains there, and it's usually so peaceful. It's just I go up in the fall a lot when there's not a lot of people there. I don't take a lot of summer vacations. My wife and I never really have. We were married in October, the end of October. Halloween was booked, so we couldn't do that, so we had to do October 30th. But you know, we always took it, and I always loved taking vacations and going away at that time because it's just so quiet and so peaceful. We've had hotels, we've gone places where we've literally had the whole hotel to ourselves because it's just the off season. And you wake up and you almost wish, like, why can't this just be life all the time instead of just, I remember going to the White Mountains in the summertime when we were waiting 2.5 hours just to get a meal at like a diner that's so packed of people. And why can't you just have these quiet times sometimes? So I love the beauty that she put into this. It was a great, great job. Sharon, what do you think?
We actually lost her. She's not on the phone anymore.
Oh, okay. Well, Sharon, thanks for calling in. It was a pleasure. Great surprise. And she also inspired me to just randomly call numbers and see what happens. But apparently she just called the number and just said, I think this is an old show. And jumped on our show, which I thought was really fun. So thanks for calling in. All right, Faiza, you got to read it. What would you think?
I really liked it. I looked up egret, and it does completely look like your picture. So I would not be surprised if that's what it is. But it's a kind of heron, so you know it doesn't disqualify what other people have said. I like that it has the word poised because there's something about the posture of this bird and this type of bird that is poised. It's like a ballerina kind of thing. But it also reminds me of like yoga positions because you are poised in a specific position in order to rest and not rest, but like, I don't know, I'm not a yoga person, but I picture people like meditating, standing on one leg. and that's what the bird does, literally on one leg often. And there's this recognition of like, this is their home. Yes, it is it says the place of his birth. This is where he belongs. And it recognizes that there is stuff underneath all of that. There's the alligators and the, you know, there's things above in the sky. But right now, that bird on the horizon is just in that little zone, and it's unruffled. I really like the line, "Let this unruffled presence permeate your soul." The word permeate is just perfect right there. I'm going to sneeze. 1 second. Okay. Hopefully I muted
myself
fast enough.
You did. You did.
Okay. I muted so I didn't destroy your ears.
Okay.
I like the idea of trying to hold on to this moment. And it talks about, like, folding it up, and the way that it's described as inside the brown paper bag and the strings and bring it home. But in a way, you did that, Daniel, because you took this picture so you could think about it later. And yes, you don't get the wind and the sounds and all of that, but you captured a little part of it, and you share it with us. And sometimes that's the best we can do.
Well, that's so nice of you. I appreciate it. And, I like the bird is obviously the center point, even though it's way over on the side. And egrets and cranes and storks and those things have it's almost majestic, because it's very long, skinny necks and this kind of little head sitting there, but it's very, very majestic, I guess, is the best word. Very I'm spacing the word I'm trying to say with it, but proud, you know, proud in a nice way where it's very strong, you know, and so I do see what you're saying about that. So excellent. Thanks, Faziana. All right, let's move. Oh, and Sharon said, had to mute off. Noise is coming. Thanks for letting me enjoy with all of you. Well, thank you again for calling in. I hope you call in again. But
yes,
Faziana,
thank you.
Here,
we love having you here.
Yes. Absolutely. It was fun. All right, let's go.
Okay. So impatient, Dan.
Sorry.
I'm just kidding. My internet was being slow, but it's there now.
Yes, I get.
There's one by Zara for you.
I make less sense as the night goes on. This is a very – I didn't get – usually I try to take a nap on days I have shows because I'm up at like 6 in the morning, and I tried to take a nap twice today and got woken up both times, so I'm a little punch drunk today, but that's okay.
I feel you.
That's good for you.
I had a meeting at 3 o'clock today, and I hadn't had lunch because I had back-to-back things. And in the middle of the meeting, I was supposed to be saying something else, and all of a sudden I said, apples.
No reason.
I guess I was so hungry that I just blurted out apples. And people were like, what? I was like, apples.
Apples? Get me an apple. What's wrong with you people? Apples. I want apples.
Oh, I was like, oh, crap, am I having, like, a seizure? Because sometimes if I have a seizure, I just start saying random shit. But, no, I don't know. I just randomly said apples. So you may be a little bit foggy, but I cannot judge because I blurred out apples.
So you've inspired me now. I'm going to do that at some point tomorrow during the day. I'm going to randomly say apples in a meeting and just see what people say. I think that would be actually fun. No, they would say, what? Nothing. What? I didn't say anything. I just want to see what people do. That's actually an interesting thing. And no one got you an apple, I'm guessing, huh? You didn't get an apple out of it?
No. You know what?
Oh, that's...
And thinking about it now, I might have been influenced by... So Mo Willems is a children's author, and I read his Elephant and Piggy books to kids, like, all the time. And one of his books that I just read yesterday to the kids is called We Were in a Book, and the characters realize that they're in a story, and so they try to make the reader, so me, say words they think are funny. And it's for, like, very young kids, so they decide that banana is a funny word, and they're like, we're going to make the reader say banana. And then they like, whisper to each other, and then they go, banana. And then because I'm reading it out loud, I say banana. And then everyone, like, bursts out laughing, and anyway, because it randomly says banana in another sentence, it just, maybe that's why I blurted out apple. I'm in a book.
maybe. Good thing you weren't reading Everybody Poops. Who knows what would have came out if you were reading apple. Jeez. But you were reading apple. But I do agree. Banana is a funny word. There are some words that if you think about it, like, it's just funny. I remember my wife and I drive. This I think we must have been extremely tired. I know we're way off topic here. I'm sorry, Zarina. We'll get to your poem in a second. I just remember this time we were driving down the street, and I think my wife and I were so exhausted, and for some reason the word pig and the word bump, we could not stop laughing at that word. Like, my wife just read the word bump, and we both couldn't stop. We're so tired that the word itself just seemed so funny. We couldn't stop laughing at it. There are definitely funny words when you think about it. Anyway, all right, Zara H., your poem is up next. And it's a nice little brevity called Those Eyelashes. Embedded to ground, observing your soul wallow. I can't shake that sight when those eyelashes drowned in your verdant eyes. End poem. You want to take a stab at this one, Faizy?
Oh, yeah. I like the word choices, you know, and you have to be really on with your word choices when you have it such a short poem. But, like, embedded was a good choice. Wallow. And then verdant. I'm, like, very particular with the word choices. You can tell that Zara took care in picking out the words. Because it's not just green. It's verdant as in the bright, lush green of grass. It's specifically connecting that nature imagery to the person's eyes, which makes it work with the poem. I mean, sorry, it is poem. With the picture that you're doing. The eyelashes create such an image in my mind. The eyelashes drowned in your verdant eyes. It's beautiful.
Yeah, absolutely. It was very interesting. I don't think we're going to get to all the poems, but they went in such different directions that I love when art or anything does that, even phrases just inspire people in strange directions you ever think. And I was trying to figure out where this came from, and to me, I don't know if everyone can see the picture, but there's the bird in this, and there's the water, kind of like a swampy water, but then there's these trees in the background that you can see in the reflecting in the water, and it could almost be like eyelashes. So it's almost like this is an eye that we're seeing, and the heron or egret or whatever it is could almost be the pupil, and that's where I'm maybe getting. I might be Zara. You can let me know if I'm correct if you're listening, but it almost kind of see it like that, and embedded to ground, right? Observing your soul wallow. I can't take that sight when those eyelashes drown in your verdant eyes. So almost making it see like an eye into the soul or an eye into the earth that she's seeing. It's really interesting to be able to see that in the picture. Great job. All right, what else do you want to do?
This next one is actually our last one for that contest that I knew we had permission for anyway.
Okay.
So I'm going to read this one by Scott, and I think our timing's going to be just right because there's only 10 minutes left.
Cool.
This is Turn This River Round by S. Sharp. Days strike me like reflections, Darwinian revelations of survival. Slow-moving river, absent of tides, where I land in perpetuity. Billy Pilgrim, stuck in time, seeing myself upstream, downstream, all at once, but nowhere. With wings close by my side, unable to fly, standing in the muck of a stagnant tributary. Youthful lines take to the sky. Dad threatening to turn this river around. I think that would be real nice, heading north for the winter, up near Boston, back in time. There is something to be said about childhood. End poem.
Excellent job, and thank you again, Scott. Scott doesn't know I'm up in Boston there. I forget where he's from, so he throws that in there sometimes for the poems, and I always appreciate giving that personal touch for that, Scott. And, very interesting again. Scott has a really unique way of looking at things. I do like that he called himself Billy Pilgrim when he was doing this little journey that he's going. Seeing myself upstream, downstream, all at once, but nowhere. So I think this is the second one with this. I think that Ben also had it as a journey, as like kind of like going along. So they saw this picture as a river and journeying along the river, right? So days strike me like reflections, Darwinian revelations of survival, which is really interesting. I mean, just that is, just as a side note, I mean, that one line you could talk about forever, Darwinian revelations of survival. How many times do we do that throughout the day, right? We change, we adapt, we evolve almost every single day to survive. I know I do. I'm not the same person I was before. I mean, the job I am is different. A lot of it's because of me. I change things, but still you have to adapt all the time to survive. Slow moving river, absence of ties, where I land in perpetuity. With wings close by my side, unable to fly, standing in the muck. So he's seeing this differently than everybody else. But he's seeing it as the bird is almost stuck there, and can't move, and in a stagnant tributary. And the water is actually stagnant. So he's seeing it kind of correctly. But Dad is threatening to turn the whole river around, which is really interesting. That would be nice. Let me go back in time to where I was. When I was a child again. So he's got so many levels here, and really, talking about, where he is, and he's kind of stuck in the life that he is now, right? You're stuck in this life that you've built, and we all are as adults there. Why can't I just turn around and go back to being a kid again? Why can't I go down back the upstream the river and go back to be a kid and turn everything around? So many great levels that you have in this poem, Scott. It was really, really interesting. Scott usually writes around the same size poems every time, and there's so much that he puts into, maybe 20 or so lines that he has. He really packs things in and is able to have multiple layers to be able to read the poem on. So excellent, excellent job. Basie, it's all about you.
I really like this, and turn this river around. You can totally hear like that in the tone of voice of like, don't make me turn this car around. it's so great, and that is such a dad thing to say. Then you want it later on. When you're a kid, you're like, oh no, I don't want to miss the whatever you're driving towards. But as an adult, like, I kind of wish that Dad would turn the car around and we go back home, like, to the old days of home. There's a nostalgia in this that it's recognizing that even those moments that it didn't feel great at the time, Dad yelling because you're fighting in the back seat, actually was kind of a nice moment in a way, and you never expected that you'd want to go back to that, but sometimes you do. And I like the idea of landing somewhere in perpetuity, that the river doesn't have tides anymore. You're just stuck. Like you said, adulting doesn't feel like all the action that you may have expected it would. It can be kind of repetitive. So sometimes it feels like like you're not really going anywhere. You're imagining upstream or downstream, but you're not really in any of it. You're not in the past. You're not in the future. You're somewhere in between and doesn't feel like you're making progress. The Darwinian revelations of survival is a great line. You know, survival of the fittest. I almost said yo at the end of that. I don't know, survival of the fittest, yo. I feel like we just saw that in a TV show or something. Cause, it was probably rhyme. Someone said that recently with a yo at the end, because I don't naturally add yo to everything, but I was seriously going to say survival of the fittest, yo. So I definitely heard that recently. And like you said, we have to evolve to make things work. And, you know, maybe the bird evolved into not being in a place where there are tides. It is now designed in such a way that it works in stagnant water. And then it talks about unable to fly. Not this particular bird, but there are some kinds of birds that don't fly. And maybe they have that kind of feeling of like, oh man, I wish I would have evolved a different way. The whole turning the river around thing is really great. I like that it comes to that later on in the poem, because then it brings back to the title. And I definitely think the Boston was a reference to you, Dan. That's a plug at you.
Yeah, no, it absolutely is. And he actually, Scott, on his book, actually used a picture of mine for his cover of his book. His book is called For the Love of Poetry, and it was a picture I took in this area. So, yeah, he definitely knows that I'm from around here. So thanks again, Scott, for that.
He's on the chat, and he just yelled out, Apple!
Oh, he did? Oh, Scott. There you go. There you go, Scott. Yeah, he did. He wrote an apple. You guys make an awesome tune and propose. So yeah, apples. That's gonna be the name of our show is apples. You know, again,
apple.
For no reason. Apple, yes. Thanks, Scott. I'm glad you're listening, Scott. So I liked. Yeah, I agree with. You know, it's childhood is so. I mean, we only have a couple minutes left, but childhood is. I mean. Every single person looks back at times, unless you had a horrible childhood, right, and you're abused. I mean, obviously there's people that unfortunately went through that, but most people look back and like, why can't I be 10 again, you know, and just be hanging out, and I don't have to pay anything. I just have to kind of survive school every day, and I can do whatever I want. I get the summers off, and, you know, it's that, you know, you kind of don't realize how good you have it when you're 10 and 11 until, you know, you are an adult, and you have to actually do adult things, right? And so that that really feel that Scott has is great there. So cool. Another showdown, and this one was so much fun, Faziana. I miss you all the time when it's when Friday comes after the show. I'm like, oh, I got 2 weeks till I can hang out with the Faziana again. So it was great to hang out with you again today, and I thought some really interesting poetry.
We did. It was fun, and it was nice having a caller, even though she accidentally stumbled upon us. You know, she fit the vibe. I thought it was good.
Absolutely did. So I'm not sure what we're going to do 2 weeks from now. I have a contest about a piano player named Katarina Supanetsky, who is going to try to join herself, but she has a contest, so we pushed it out to the – you guys can look for that contest. It's pushed out till the 29th. But are you going to try to put one up for next week?
I am.
Excellent.
I will do it. Yep. I'm not quite sure what yet. I have a folder of things that are my maybes, so I will dig through that and decide which one. We are now out of time, so thank you very much, Sharon and Dan and everybody who wrote for the contest. We will see you again in 2 weeks.
Absolutely. Have a great night. Thanks, Faziana. Take care.